From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour will be made on the backside of your ballot. We're talking about Prop 1 this hour. Supporters are referring to it as the Equal Rights Amendment. Opponents view it quite differently. And I want to start by reading exactly the language that you're going to see on the ballot. Again, it's on the backside of the ballot, so make sure you flip it over and take a look. Early voting starts on Saturday in this state. Here is the language of Prop 1 in full. Quote, "No person shall be denied the equal protection of the laws of this state or any subdivision thereof. No person shall, because of race, color, ethnicity, national origin, age, disability, creed, religion, or sex, including sexual orientation, gender identity, gender expression, pregnancy, pregnancy outcomes, and reproductive health care and autonomy, be subjected to any discrimination in his or her civil rights by any other person or by any firm, corporation, or institution, or by the state, or any agency or subdivision of the state pursuant to law." That's Section A. Here's B. "Nothing in this section shall invalidate or prevent the adoption of any law, regulation, program, or practice that is designed to prevent or dismantle discrimination on the basis of a characteristic listed in this section, nor shall any characteristic listed in this section be interpreted to interfere with, limit, or deny the civil rights of any person based upon any other characteristic identified in this section." End quote. Well, I can't believe people are confused. That's a lot of words. Not a lot of sentences. It's a lot of semicolons. Advocates say, look, this is about enshrining equal rights and freedoms. Opponents have come out in full force, and you might see signs in front yards, slogans such as "protect girls' sports" or "support parental choice." They fear that the language in this proposition is too vague or opens the door beyond what supporters are claiming it will do. So this hour, a conversation about the proposed amendment here that you're going to see on the ballot. And let me welcome my guests who are with us now. In studio with us, Meredith Outerkirk is Director of Public Affairs for Planned Parenthood of Central and Western New York. Meredith, thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Welcome to Pastor Fritz Longabaugh. Fritz is lead pastor at Ridgeland Community Church. Fritz, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Glad to be here.
Where's the church?
It's really near RIT.
Right near, okay. Henrietta, technically.
Henrietta, right.
Nice to have you, Pastor. Thanks for being with us. Sharon Stiller is with us, a partner and director of the employment law practice at Abrams Fensterman LLP. Sharon, welcome back to the program. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Evan. Always my pleasure.
Okay, so on the legal side, Sharon, I want to ask you just a question. Am I crazy to think that that's a lot of words that kind of got my brain in a bit of a pretzel?
You know, if you break it down, it is understandable. The history is fascinating, but you know, basically what it means is no discrimination based on those categories.
Okay, but we're not supposed to discriminate already, right? I mean, take me through.
So true.
Okay.
So true.
Okay.
So let me just give you a little bit of history. So this is an amendment to existing protections that have been in our Constitution since 1938, believe it or not, for race, color, creed, and religion. So it's just adding to those categories. But there are also statutes that I deal with a lot as an employment lawyer, which protect against discrimination also. So it's constitutionalizing some already existing legislation. I don't know if that makes it simpler or not. So,
no, I understand, and I appreciate that. I want to ask our guests in studio just for some opening remarks about where they are on this, and then we're going to try to work through, you know, point by point as best we can. Meredith, how do you feel about this prop, and why do you think it's important? I know you're a big supporter.
Yeah. Well, I'm really excited to be here and really excited to talk about why this is so important. The fact is that we in New York, this election season, actually have the opportunity to be part of this historic move toward enshrining the rights and reproductive freedoms that we currently enjoy in this state into our Constitution to ensure that they can't be rolled back. since the Dobbs decision 2 years ago, when we saw Roe versus Wade fall, we've seen 21 states across this country ban or significantly reduce access to abortion. And many of those states and many of the people in those states considered themselves safe. They considered their rights protected. So what we want to see is that in New York, we're enshrining these protections along with a host of other protections for vulnerable populations, ensuring that those rights are not subject to the whims of politicians. As I said, right now, we're grateful to have those rights protected, but they're vulnerable as long as they're not part of our Constitution. They're vulnerable to being rolled back because of the attitudes and the whims and the political tides in our state. And we want to ensure that these current rights and protections that we are experiencing remain solid.
Pastor Longaba, you want to take us through some of your thoughts here?
Well, I'd say that it's not unequal rights. I'd say unequal rights. First of all, for girls and women in sports. I'd say also it's unequal for the children involved, the unborn children involved. And of course, that hinges on the question about whether that child is a human and whether that child has any rights. So that's at the heart of the debate. But it's also really concerning that parents from this legislation could be taken out of parental permission for kids that consider themselves trans. Could be eliminated. And I think that's extremely unwise.
Can you elaborate a little on that last point? Again, there's individual points. Listeners, we're going to try to work through point by point. But on parental choice and permission, take me through how you see this going a little bit more specifically, why this is a concern.
Well, the language is sounds pretty vague and broad. But as our other guest said, that it's essentially there to protect people from discrimination. So that could easily be a teenager says, look, I'm trans, and it could be considered discrimination for parents to say no to that. So to me, that seems obviously in play.
Okay, but describe what it means I appreciate the concern to not be vague, right? So like, let's be as specific as we can. So when you say a teenager says, okay, I'm trans, and a parent wants to say no to that.
Well, specifically
what does that mean?
To treatment. So
To treatment.
Yeah. So for example, there's a professional association called Do No Harm, and they recently came out with statistics about how many teenagers in the last 4 years, minors, I should say, have gone through treatment, either hormonal retreatment or surgical treatment for sex change. And so 8,500 for the hormone treatment and 5,500 for permanently surgically altering their bodies. So these are not small numbers. There are thousands of people, thousands of minors that are going through this. And that's the concern.
So I want to make, before I ask Sharon a little bit about this, what you're saying is parents should have the right to say to a child, to one of their children, we are not going to support, you say you're trans, we are not going to support surgery or hormonal treatment.
Absolutely.
And
right.
If they're a minor, I assume, right?
Yeah.
I mean
mm-hmm.
like up to the age of adulthood. So you're saying no, they should be able to say no. And your concern is that Prop 1 will set the stage where a child will be able to say, I'm being discriminated against by my own parent for not allowing this and force a legal allowance.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Sharon Stiller, what do you make of that?
Well, I'm not going to opine on how the courts are going to interpret the law because the courts will have to interpret it just like the courts interpret any law. But these arguments, there have been arguments on both sides, and people have said that there are existing laws which protect parental decisions. There are existing laws which define, and really, even without the constitutional amendment, there have been issues concerning what sex does somebody compete in sports. But, you know, those are issues that have already been tackled. They're issues that have already been tackled under the laws that exist. And there are issues that will be tackled under these laws. But I don't think that you can say that the law itself causes those results.
Okay. Before I ask the pastor if he wants to respond to that, Meredith, anything you want to add on this particular portion of it? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I would love to speak on this. So to be really clear, advocates, actually, I would like to flip that notion on its head. This idea that this will put parents and their children at odds with each other. The intention of this amendment, and actually what we're hoping for, is that this will shore up parental rights. This is going to make it so that if your young person in your life comes to you and says and comes out to you as transgender or non-binary, if you in your home feel that you should be able to get them gender-affirming care, you are able to do that. This is not about rescinding parental rights. This is about keeping the government from being part of that decision that you make for your child.
So let me just ask you, Meredith, some of what Fritz is saying is the idea that, let's say a child is any age that is a minor, 12, 13, 14, whatever. And the child says to the parent, you know, this is who I am. And the parent says, okay, but right now we are not going to do surgery. We're not going to do hormonal treatment. You know, maybe the parent is saying, let's give this some time. We love you. We're going to try to support you and work with you, but this is not happening right now. Do you think the child should be able to turn around and then say, that is discrimination against me. This should be my choice. I should be able to get whatever I want.
Evan, I don't think it's my place to tell anyone what they should or shouldn't be able to do with their body. What I would really like to be clear about here is that this is about government discrimination, not about parental discrimination. And to be really clear, Prop 1 does not change any of the current laws or regulations that we see in this state. It enshrines them. So in this state right now, young people are not able to undergo gender affirming care without parental permission.
Right.
And it's also pretty atypical for them to undergo surgery as well. So I think that that's also, there's been some misinformation that floats around about, especially as a gender affirming care provider, what we really see in these situations. And some of the situations that have been described are actually extremely atypical. And you don't see young people undergoing this care in New York State without parental permission.
So, Fritz, in a moment, I want to listen to some of what Assemblymember Jen Lunsford said on this program last week. And what we've often been told by, and Congressman Joe Morelli last hour said the same thing. He supports this prop because he says we are enshrining, we're not creating from whole cloth new law. And part of what Meredith is arguing here is right now, you don't have 12-year-olds going to have surgery against their parents' wishes and just going out and getting it. And the law, if this prop is not going to create something new, then it doesn't seem to lead to the outcomes you suggest. What do you think?
Well, if is a pretty big word. I think the law, again, is very vague, and it's not true. 5,500 minors in the last year, now maybe not in New York State, or 5,500 in the last 4 years have had surgery that alters their bodies forever.
But not without support from parents or guardians, right?
Perhaps not. I don't know. I know of a case in Texas where there was a 5-year-old boy who wanted to be called by a girl's name. His father said no, and the father was denied parental rights. So it is happening. And there's no guarantee in this legislation that it wouldn't expand. It's a trend. It's a clear trend, and it's worrisome.
Anything more you want to add, Sharon Stiller, on this particular prong of this? Is Sharon there? Oh, we lost. We'll come back to her in a second. Let's listen now. On Meredith, anything you want to add before? Because I want to talk about girls' sports in a moment. Before we get there, anything you want to add on this particular aspect?
Yeah, I just want to reiterate that, again, some of what the pastor is identifying is a different type of transition. What he's identifying is a social transition in that case in Texas. What some of the opponents of this proposition have brought up is their concerns about gender-affirming health care. So I want to be really clear that he's actually talking about, again, what I said, something that we are not typically seeing. What we are seeing as a healthcare provider is we are seeing parents and the young people that those parents care about having to travel hundreds and sometimes thousands of miles to get to a state like New York, where they can get this often life-saving care for their children. So really, again, I want to reiterate that we're trying to shore up your parental rights to protect and make healthcare decisions that you deem appropriate for your child without government interference.
I appreciate your point about the difference between the medical side and the social transition. I think you call it the social side. But certainly in the last 10 to 20 years, a lot of this is different. It is, there's no question that there are many, many more kids in, I guess, Gen Alpha and people who've come up in Gen Z who self-identify in ways that was not the case earlier. I mean, it's, I'm not breaking any news there. Part of what I think the pastor is saying is, are we setting the stage where if a 9-year-old says, here's my pronouns, and the parents say, no, I'm not going to use your pronouns, are we setting the stage for removal of the child from the household? That feels extreme to me. I'm not denying, Fritz doesn't think that's extreme.
No, I do think that's quite extreme.
No. Fritz doesn't, when I say it sounds extreme to me, it's hard to believe that, it happened one time and we're pulling kids out of households just because a parent was struggling with a different pronoun.
There's a legislation in the pipeline in California to just that effect.
Okay. Again, I don't have the legislation in front of me. Again, I'm not trying to deny that culture is moving here. Meredith, I think what the pastor is saying is what he doesn't want to see is parents losing their children if they're not going to use their kids' pronouns. Does that make sense to you? Or do you feel, how do you feel about where we are with that and where culture is going?
I think that you're right that culture is changing a lot. But what I struggle with is that a lot of the time when we have these conversations, we automatically assume that a parent and a child will be at odds about this. But what we know is that most parents try to make the best decisions they can for their children. And all of this is honestly in the conversation about Prop 1, immaterial, because we're not talking about parents discriminating against their children. We're talking about the government discriminating against the citizens of New York. And beyond that, what I'd really just like to reiterate again is that, Catherine Bodie from NICLU has brought up some really excellent points about this, that there are actually a number of cases in which adults that are enfranchised in the country have constitutional rights that are immaterial for people under the age of 18. So I think, and Sharon could certainly speak much better to this, I'm not an attorney, I'm certainly not a constitutional attorney, but we're really not talking about discrimination between parents and young people, we're talking about discrimination between the government and the citizens of New York.
Sharon, anything you want to add on that one?
No, I think it's perfectly said, and I just want to emphasize again, or maybe the answer is yes, there's something I want to add to it. I just want to emphasize again that when we talk about these you know, kind of out on a limb results on either side, the courts have to interpret the laws just like they interpret the employment laws nowadays that protect against discrimination and come up with a reasonable result. I don't think that somebody would be removed from a home because of pronouns or anything of the sort. There's a court system that is designed to prevent against something like that.
But what about information for the parents? There are situations, abortion is one of them, where parents are cut out of that decision. Why could that not happen here?
Sharon, anything you want to add there? Because we're going to get to abortion, pregnancy, et cetera, but let's do that separately. But go ahead.
So again, I want to emphasize the fact that each factual situation is different. That's why we have courts to interpret things. And in fact, the right of privacy, which was found in Roe versus Doe, was found to not exist based on a court interpretation. So you know, in terms of the protection against discrimination. Is important constitutionally because it's much more difficult to change a constitution, and that's really the bottom line. I don't think that we can prophesize that there will be fundamental changes in the interpretation of discrimination based on the constitutional amendment.
Let's talk about girls' sports. I was just driving up to Rochester last week and passed a string of yard signs that said, "Vote no, protect girls' sports." And I asked Assemblymember Jen Lunsford about that. She was on this program last week, and she wanted to talk about her support for Prop 1. And I want to listen to this clip where she does that, and we talk a little bit about her reaction to some of the specific part of the opposition. Let's listen.
Prop 1 is the Equal Rights Amendment. Some people have called it the Equality Amendment. And all it does is it takes our existing anti-discrimination laws, the Human Rights Law, Gender, and the Reproductive Health Act, and it puts it in the Constitution so that future legislatures, future governors, can erode those rights. There is a very moneyed anti-campaign that is run by people who oppose abortion rights, who oppose protecting the LGBTQ population, but they know that in New York, those are losing arguments. You can't knock on doors and say you oppose abortion rights and hope to change that in New York. So I'm going to be very frank that there is a misinformation campaign that this proposition is going to create new categories of protections that don't exist, that it's going to eliminate girls' sports, eliminate girls' spaces like girls-specific restrooms or schools, that your kids are going to get gender reassignment surgery at school. None of that is true. All of the protections Prop 1 puts in our Constitution exist in law today. It doesn't give me the right to do things I can't do today. It doesn't create protections that don't exist today. This is an entirely made-up campaign from people who want to preserve their opportunity to erode abortion rights and LGBTQ rights in the future. And they know that if we put this in the Constitution, it's going to make that job much harder. So you're seeing Save Girls Sports because people think that resonates more than oppose abortion.
I think their claim is that whatever the language of this, it will codify that biological males have the right to go play any girls' sport they want.
That is not the case. I think part of what happened is the regent, the New York State regent, was considering something related to the Tanner Scale and about whether they should allow co-ed sports in places where there wasn't a corresponding sport, like if you have a flag football team just for girls, should you let boys play on it? That was happening at the regent level, totally unrelated to Prop 1 at the same time. And I think those two arguments kind of got mushed up together. Prop 1 doesn't say anything about girls' sports. It doesn't create protections for trans athletes that don't already exist. We've had the Dignity for All Students Act since 2012. We've had Genda since 2019. All of these protections are here today. So any rights someone has today, they'll have tomorrow, whether or not Prop 1 passes.
All right, Sharon Stiller, what do you make of some of what the assembly member says there?
I'm not going to opine on whether people's feelings about it are you know, good, bad, or indifferent, but I don't think that this law or the constitutional amendment creates protections other than protections that exist. In 2019, the New York legislature really expanded protections for reproductive rights, and that's incorporated. All of this is incorporated in the constitutional amendment. The big deal difference, I think, is that protections that exist are being put into the Constitution, which makes it much more difficult to change it. I disagree with one thing, which is that even if it's put in the Constitution, it's not immutable. Constitutions can be changed, but they live much longer because it's much more difficult to change them.
All right, so Pastor Fritz Longabaugh, who is with us in studio, is lead pastor at Ridgeland Community Church. On the subject of girls' sports, do you think this is a valid concern for those who oppose Prop 1?
Absolutely. I think that, well, first of all, if the protections already exist, why is this amendment coming about? So that's
again,
a
again, I think the argument
that's a legal
is,
argument.
I think the argument is put it in the Constitution, make it a lot harder, make it a high bar to clear.
And I'm against that. And let me tell the story of Peyton McNabb. Okay, Peyton McNabb was in her locker room. A guy came in and began to disrobe, and she was upset by that, so she took a video of it. And she said, this is what happens. She put it on Facebook. It was not explicit, but she put it on Facebook, and that was called hate speech. But this is the same Peyton McNabb who, as a junior in high school, was on a girls' volleyball team, and was playing across the net from a guy, an XY guy with XY chromosomes who was faster, stronger. There was a ball that went up. It went across the net. He came across the net. He spiked it right into her face. She crumpled on the floor, unconscious, for 30 seconds. That was 2 years ago, and to this day, she still has memory loss, and she is physically partially paralyzed. That's got to stop. Okay, that's a moral issue. I'm not talking about the legal of it, but why can't we just let girls play with other girls and women with other women?
Meredith, do you want to weigh in on that?
I'm not familiar with the instance that the pastor is talking about, so I certainly wouldn't want to assume anything about that situation. What I want to bring this back to, again, as Assemblymember Lunsford mentioned, as Sharon has mentioned, is that these protections already exist. This is already the way that we are seeing school sports operate. And for the most part, and I think it's really unfortunate what he's describing happened, but we see many more instances of young trans people just trying to engage in sports for the same reason that all young people do, to be part of a team, to engage in character building. And certainly all young people should be protected, their comfort, their safety at school. And that's what we want to see. We want to see protections for every young person, both cisgender young people and trans young people.
I think the argument, Pastor will correct me if I'm wrong, I think the argument on protection is that absolutely trans teenagers, trans kids have a desire to be part of community, to be part of teams. I mean, that's the human condition. We feel like we need to be part of things. And we desire to be part of things. And sometimes we want to work hard and be part of things and succeed. And it's important, as you say, Meredith, to protect that right of someone to pursue that. I think the pastor is saying, what about the protections for biological girls who may have a physical disadvantage and may actually, in the instance he's talking about, be at physical risk against a trans girl who may physically be quite different?
Yeah, certainly I hear the concern. But I also would like to point out that this is one instance that we're talking about. And I remember being in gym classes throughout high school with biological men. And I think what he's describing sounds like a very unfortunate and awful experience, but it does sound atypical to me. I think that all young people should be protected at school. And I think typically what we see is that young people are protected at school. And as Sharon mentioned, or I'm sorry, as Assemblywoman Lunsford mentioned, we already have DASA, we already have GENDA, and those instances are intended for protecting LGBTQ plus students.
Go ahead, Fritz.
Okay, even if it's atypical, it should never happen at all. Okay, let me give another example. So a women's soccer team in Sydney, Australia, called the Flying Bats, has five trans guys on it. It's a women's team. And they went 10-0 this year. They won their championship. And they outscored their opponents 65-4. That happens. Atypical, it shouldn't happen at all. Honestly, my jaw drops a little bit when I think that someone with XY hormones or XY chromosomes would compete with women and girls. Why? It's just not fair.
Sharon, is there something you want to add from the legal perspective as to how Prop 1 could affect this?
Again, I don't think Prop 1 would affect it. So I think that there are situations, let's take disability laws, for example, that protect people with disabilities, but only if they are able to perform the essential functions of their job. So I don't think that constitutionalizing these existing rights will create a situation where it's more likely that that people will be injured as a result of unfair or unsafe competition.
Okay, that language, more likely, that's just inappropriate. It should not happen at all. Now, the legalese of this is one thing. I'm talking about the moral issue of guys playing with girls' sports.
Okay. And again, the pastor is talking about trans men or trans girls playing with biological girls or women. And Sharon, you seem to be saying, look, this doesn't really affect this. It's a separate conversation about what should be allowed right now, but that's not what Prop 1 would not reshape the landscape here.
Yeah, I'm not going to talk about moral anything. I'm talking about legal.
Okay.
And legally, it doesn't.
Okay, and part of why I think people get caught up with Prop 1 is it does have... there's layers to this that people are thinking about. We're going to talk about pregnancy and abortion in a moment. And, in some ways, what the pastor is concerned about with girl sports lends itself to a whole separate conversation. I know you feel like Prop 1 is related to this, but regardless, this is a conversation that should be happening
separately. Our legal expert is saying that it will strengthen these rights. It will strengthen the ability for these inequalities to exist.
Actually, no, what I'm saying is that it will constitutionalize existing protections.
Which strengthens them.
So it will make it harder to change it, but it doesn't, I'm not saying that that it changes anything except to make it harder to change it because it's constitutionalized.
All right. I want to talk about the aspect of Fritz brought up unborn children. I know the subject of abortion, reproductive health, is an important one in just about every state right now. This prop, again, I'm going to read the language of this prop. If you're just joining us, Prop 1, flip over your ballots starting on Saturday with early voting. Prop 1 is there. And that is an amendment that would do the following. Section A, no person shall be denied the equal protection of the laws of this state or any subdivision thereof. No person shall, because of race, color, ethnicity, national origin, age, disability, creed, or religion, or sex, including sexual orientation, gender identity, gender expression, pregnancy, pregnancy outcomes, and reproductive health care and autonomy, be subjected to any discrimination by any other person, or by any firm, corporation, or institution, or by the state, or any agency or subdivision of the state, pursuant to law. In Section A, you just heard it, the section on pregnancy, pregnancy outcomes, reproductive health care. Meredith Utterkirk is Director of Public Affairs for Planned Parenthood of Central and Western New York. How does that section read to you? What do you think it is doing there?
So, as we've talked about, this is really about constitutionalizing the current protections that we enjoy in New York State. As I said at the top of our segment, Roe v. Wade fell with the Dobbs decision a little over 2 years ago at this time. And at that time, a lot of people thought that their rights and reproductive freedoms were safe. And we saw that that is not the case. Since that time, 21 states across this country have banned or severely restricted abortion in those states. And what we know is that the majority of people across this country, and significantly the majority of New Yorkers, are supportive of having their rights and reproductive freedoms protected. And so I think that that's a wonderful part of the amendment. And to be really clear, it's not just about abortion. It's also about protections from being criminalized for a miscarriage, which we are really terrifyingly seeing in other states across the country. It's about ensuring that your access to IVF is protected and that you're able to start a family how and if and when you choose to do so. Overall, we're really pleased that it's not just about abortion, as important as abortion is to me and to 8 out of 10 other adults in the U.S., but it's about so much more than that. It's about having a full spectrum of reproductive freedom available to people.
Pastor, I'm going to give you some space to talk about abortion and how you feel that this prop will affect it.
Again, I don't want to get caught up in the legalese. I would start with a fun fact that the unborn offspring of bald eagles is federally protected. You cannot take the egg of a bald eagle and destroy it. Humans don't have that same protection.
Well, there's a reason. The reason the law does that is because of how few eagles there are, right?
So you seem to be implying that human life does not have the same value based upon numbers.
I didn't say that. I'm just observing why the law is written the way it is.
Yeah. See, this is where I really disagree. And how Prop 1 affects this, I don't know. But there are significant numbers of people who think that abortion is just wrong because it all hinges on, is that lump of cells a human being? Is it a person? Well, it's not a daffodil. Conception or sex begins a biological process that leads to a child. And the only thing that makes the difference between whether that is that lump of cells is considered a child is whether that child is wanted. Science is very clear on this. The biological process of a child growing in the womb is very clear. It will become a child unless something is done to interrupt that. And that's killing. This is stark language, and I'm sorry, I don't mean to be offensive. But I do consider it to be a matter of life and death. And that's why I want to be really clear. If that lump of cells is a person, that person has rights. And I think the only thing that determines whether that is a person or not is whether that child is wanted. I have two adopted children. Many people, I'm part of a big network of adopted people, adopted parents, but so many parents want to adopt and yet they can't. There's just not enough kids.
So I'm going to give Meredith some time to talk about this. I will say, Pastor, that I think the only really sort of obvious argument that immediately falls apart is after conception that something isn't alive. That's not a living thing, a living something. Something is alive.
Why not?
Oh, no. Because something is obviously alive. Something is growing.
Oh, okay.
I think everyone agrees on that now. I think the question becomes the categorization of human rights and personhood. And I think your work should be to probably persuade more people that that personhood starts with that clump of cells, because I think, at least in this state, a significant number of people do not feel that that clump of cells is due the same rights as a 4-year-old or a 44-year-old or a 104-year-old, that it is viewed fundamentally differently.
And I want Meredith to have a chance to speak, but I would put this on a spectrum. We know in Nazi Germany that Jews were considered less than human. We know in certain ethnic groups consider other ethnic groups less than human. That's horrible. And we know that that's horrible. What I'm saying is we need to extend that to the unborn as well.
All right, Meredith. Go ahead.
So I want to be clear. I'm not here to debate the morality of abortion.
Yeah, that's a whole separate.
Yeah. I think that the pastor and I certainly both have our minds made up on this, and we think really differently about it. What I also want to make clear is that people have abortions for all sorts of reasons. Sometimes it's because they are pregnant and they don't want to be. Sometimes they do want to be pregnant, but there is something wrong with that pregnancy that makes it dangerous for the pregnant person to continue. My position on that is that it's simply not my place to tell anyone what to do with their body. I want to ensure, and as Planned Parenthood, our mission is to ensure that we aren't putting our finger on the scale in either direction of what someone chooses, but rather that they have the opportunity to make that decision for themselves as the expert in their own life and their own life experiences. And further, we want to ensure that when a pregnant person is making a decision about whether or not to continue a pregnancy, their doctor is also able to provide care to them in whatever way that person and their doctor see the most appropriate. We've seen some really horrific things happen in other states where access to abortion is restricted. You can look at any number of these cases where a person who had a wanted pregnancy had something really dangerous happen with that pregnancy. And because of the restrictions that are happening in other states across the country due to the Dobbs decision, their doctor was not able to provide care to them, life-saving care. We have seen people die because they didn't have access to that life-saving care that is a normal part of the spectrum of healthcare. 1 in 4 women and more trans and non-binary people before the age of 44 in this country will have an abortion. It's a typical part of healthcare. And we need to ensure that it is those pregnant people and their doctors making decisions about what happens with that pregnancy, not out of touch politicians.
Before I go to Sharon, Pastor, the moral discussion, as Meredith said, was not really, and I understand why you're making the point, and you have every right if you, that's how you want to spend the time here. When you look at the prop, are you concerned on the legal side of things.
You're asking a pastor to talk about law. That's not a good idea.
Well, I'm not.
But still, okay, let me respond.
Yeah.
So what I've researched and heard is that insofar as abortion is concerned, that if there is a non-discrimination, that it becomes absolute, then that pushes the right to abort into the ninth month of pregnancy, that is. And it's absurd to think that you're considered a human when you're on one side of the vaginal wall, that is after birth, but a few weeks earlier you're not. There's a logical absurdity to when a person is considered a person. And that's why I think it's an unequal rights amendment. If that child is a child, if that lump of cells is a person, then they are due the rights that any other person is.
Sharon Stiller, on that legal side of things, anything you want to add here?
Just that you interpret the... Let me just give you some background on why that second section is in there. So various states have approached this issue differently. When we talk about some of what we've called moral issues, the word that's often used in order to create more focus in legislation is viable. But just like this second part of the proposed constitutional amendment would prevent adopting any law that restricts the protection against discrimination. There are some states that have constitutional provisions that provide that the Constitution cannot be interpreted to provide a right to abortion. So this is somewhat different, but this is different than those states.
Okay. Anything more, Meredith, that you want to add before I get some feedback? Every phone line is now filled up, and I can't do...
Not surprising.
I can't do 2 more hours of phone calls. Meredith, anything you want to add?
No, I think Sharon covered it. I think we've had a good conversation about
this. Let me ask you a question about intention of why this prop is on here now. About 10 years ago, Rob Astorino was the Republican candidate for governor in this state. And at the time, there was a 10, and I'm trying to remember as best I can. There were 10 different provisions in a women's rights bill. And the 10th was codification of Roe v. Wade. And Rob Astorino said, "We're in New York State. Why are we doing this? That is not even on the landscape. It's never going to happen. Why are we doing this?" And of course, 8 years later, Dobbs happens, and now it's back in the state's hands. Do you feel like part of the reason this prop exists is because of Dobbs and because of trying to make it a higher bar to get at things like abortion in the future for legislatures?
Certainly. I think people across the country are seeing their interests not be represented by the people who are meant to represent them. Access to abortion and to the spectrum of reproductive health care is overwhelmingly popular in the United States. People want that access to be able to make their own decisions about their own bodies. And what we want to ensure is that remains protected in New York State and that we don't find ourselves in a position where a politician who isn't representing our interests is able to roll those protections back.
I think that answers Dorothy's question. Let me see here. Dorothy in Rochester, you wanted to know why is this proposition on the ballot now. Is that correct, Dorothy?
Well, yeah, and part of it, I mean, if you're saying that these things won't change these, you know, affect these categories, then why are they in there at all? Because I don't see how you can add a category like sex, you know, just sex, no, nothing more descriptive about it, and have it not affect girls' sports. It, you know, we're having this affect girls' sports without it being part of our Constitution. You know, and so I really, to me, this is going to set all these lawsuits in, and you're going to have men into boys into girls' sports, and I don't see how this cannot be an outcome of that.
Okay.
And I do think that they're using abortion to distract from some of these other issues that are on there. I mean, autonomy, what does that even mean?
Dorothy, thank you. The autonomy part, okay. The language gender identity, gender expression, pregnancy, pregnancy outcomes, and reproductive health care and autonomy. Let me work backwards. Let me start with Meredith, and then I'll get all of our guests in on this. The word autonomy means what to you in this prop?
In this proposition, and in general, my understanding, and to me, it means the ability to make your own decisions.
Choose for yourself there. Mm-hmm. Okay. Sharon Stiller, do you want to respond to some of what Dorothy is saying there?
Number one, let's go to reproductive autonomy, and it is reproductive autonomy. So it's the ability to make your own decisions, to choose to engage in vitro or whatever else you choose to do. I think one of the reasons for having a constitutional amendment is to have some certainty. Your guests talked about what everybody thought the federal right was under Roe versus Wade, and then that was overturned, and it was given to the states to make these decisions. But you have situations like, for example, this Arizona, where Arizona pulled out an 1864 near total ban on abortion, and was enforcing that as a result of the Dobbs decision. And then 5 months later, the state repealed that ruling, and now abortion is legal in Arizona up to 15 weeks of gestation. And there's a ballot measure on in Arizona now. So I think certainty of the law is very important, and that's a basic reason for incorporating it into the Constitution.
Okay.
Also, can I just say with respect to sex? Sex has been interpreted since the 1980s, both on the federal and state level. I don't think that using the word sex opens up a Pandora's box.
Okay, Dorothy, thank you for that phone call. Before I jump back to a little bit of feedback, I want to, because you brought up the moral grounding here. You said, as a pastor, of course you're coming at this from a moral angle. And I understand that. J.D. Vance on a podcast was asked about kind of the culture of life right now. And he said that we are way too blithe about, in his view, dismissing life via abortion. This is what Senator Vance is saying. And he was asked about those unusual but possible cases. A 10-year-old girl is raped and is pregnant. And he said that, you know, we can't view pregnancy as so inconvenient that we're able to just throw out a life. And I wonder how you feel, if you agree with that even a 10-year-old who can be impregnated at rape, we should be saying to that girl that what happened to you is terrible, but you are going to carry this child.
Yeah, personally, I think if you make the choice to have sex, then you're responsible for that choice. If you don't make that choice, if you are raped, to me that is a different category. Now,
but you've said that that clump of cells is a human; it's the same, and you're going to allow the killing of that.
Of that clump of cells?
In the case of a rape,
it's a tough decision morally. There's no doubt about it. I do believe that's a life in there. But that girl had that forced upon her, and that makes it morally very complicated. And there are people that are raped that do choose to have those children. So that's an option.
I bring this up not as a gotcha. I hope it doesn't come off that way at all. I think this is complicated.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when you said earlier that clump of cells is a human being, in your view, there's a reason. That's essentially what you're saying.
Well, this is where I ask for 5 seconds of sympathy. It's the conservative voice here.
You've got this sympathy.
Thank
Go
you
ahead.
So much. I really appreciate that. But do you hear in the question how difficult that is to answer? You want to put me in the position of saying a 10-year-old raped girl has to have a child. That's a really difficult position. And I don't want to take that bait, because the number of abortions that are result from rape is 1-2% of all abortions. Mm-hmm. So we're dealing with an important segment here, but it's less.
The number of trans girls who want to play sports and potentially endanger other girls is less than that.
Yeah. Okay.
So you're choosing kind of outlier close to examples. And I know you don't like when I bring back the other side.
No, go ahead, bring it.
No, I'm just saying I think we should talk about every case. I think it's fair for you to talk about ninth month, end of pregnancy abortion cases, even though the left will say, well, that's rare, rarely happens. Well, you're saying, but it does. It doesn't happen often, so, but it does happen, so we should talk about it.
To put the government in the position of saying to a 10-year-old, you have to have this child, is just a really untenable position. It's also a very small number of people. Yes, that's true. But given that we're talking about enshrining the right to abortion at any point, this is a very small sampling of the case. And I frankly think it's not a good line of reasoning to pursue. Is that a child? Yes, I would say it is. But there's just so much moral complexity in that particular case. I just shake my head and say, I can't answer that definitively.
Okay, fair enough. And I am really appreciative that you're here, and I hope that you feel that.
Oh, I know, I know.
And I want to say at the end here of this conversation, we've tried to explore, the whole board is just phone calls, and I've got emails and emails, and I know listeners want, a lot of the response is on the moral questions on girl sports. It's on abortion. Those are separate conversations, but they are tied to this. That's part of why we're having this conversation. And I want to just ask Sharon Stiller as we get ready to close here. Do you feel like we understand this any better here, Sharon? I hope that's what we've been trying to do. I want people to vote however they want to vote, but do you feel like we understand it better?
I think it's complicated to begin with, but I think it's important to divorce the legal and the moral aspects of it. And I think legally, hopefully, you do understand it a little bit better.
I hope so. Do you want to take 30 seconds and final thoughts from you, Pastor?
Well, you can't divorce law from morals. I'm a pastor. I haven't even mentioned God. I would say that in terms of autonomy, moral decision-making apart from God is a very difficult thing. And I know the audience to whom I'm speaking. A lot of people don't believe in Scripture, have mixed feelings about God. But if God exists, then we have to bring a different moral equation to this. It's not just what I think and what I feel. Autonomy is not the highest moral standard.
And as the music plays, 30 seconds, keep it tight. Go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. I would just like to point out that the pastor had a difficult time saying what someone should do in the hypothetical situation that you brought up, the case of a 10-year-old girl who's experienced sexual assault. That's exactly why one-size-fits-all laws made by politicians or other people who aren't in that room are not appropriate. It's exactly why our ability to make those decisions for ourselves with our healthcare professionals should be protected. And I want to zoom out because we've talked a lot about gender, but this proposition protects so many other aspects of identity and so many other vulnerable New Yorkers. And I think that that's really important to acknowledge here.
Meredith is Director of Public Affairs for Planned Parenthood of Central and Western New York. Thank you for being here. You will find Pastor Fritz Longabaugh at Ridgeland Community Church in Henrietta. Thank you, Pastor. Sharon Stiller, thank you as well. Thanks for taking the time. And from all of us at Connections, thanks for listening. We're back with you tomorrow.